Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
There are two rules to remember if you want to have a good time.
Rules! No rules!
Rule number one.
Keep your friends close, but your enemies closer.
Rule number two.
You're a dragon. Be a dragon.
Ciao, Bella.
This week on Double Dragon, Steve and I cover episode 5, We Light the Way. Then Kavita Mudon Finn joins me to talk about clothing, specifically the colors of clothing in the medieval world. There were actually laws about who could wear what, and I found that fascinating. You, of course, can send emails to book@baldmove.com. And I will mention again, my buddy Patrick Moran is doing House of the Dragon themed artwork. Go to his website at Patrick Moran Art and Design to see his latest. Okay, without further ado, here is comic Steve Osborne. Hey, Steve, have you ever worn a green dress that incited a rebellion?
You know, and I'm thinking back to how often I wear, like, I have 3 pairs of green shoes.
I've seen at least one pair.
Right, and I mean, looking back, I mean, I wore those green shoes to the premiere.
Yeah.
And I had no idea what I was stepping into. I was sending all kinds of mixed signals.
I have an association with green that I don't know if it's actually true or not. When I was a kid, I had this view, and I don't know where I got it, but I had this idea that if a guy was wearing a green jacket and he had one red shoe and one blue shoe, then he would sell drugs to either the Crips or the Bloods.
What?
I heard this. Somewhere. And so I was always like on the lookout for someone like dressed like a clown. Never saw this in real life, but that is my association. That is my association with that color green.
Green jacket, red shoe, blue shoe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that was like, he was like the Switzerland of gang relations. Like,
yeah, specifically for drug deals.
Okay.
Are you saying you never heard that?
I don't think anyone's ever heard that.
All right. So I've identified 5, 6, I've a number of storylines, and I'm going to start reading one of them. This is called... This will save me some time from counting these up.
Got it.
This is called The Veil. Rhea Royce, Lady of the Vale, rides out to hunt and exchanges pleasantries with her cousin. Upon her return, she sees a man in black, who turns out to be her husband. She insults him, gets spooked, which in turn spooks the horse. The horse falls on top of her. Damon puts a boot on her arm, sees that it's broken, and turns to leave. She provokes him again. Then he picks up a rock as if to kill her. All right, so later on, arriving late to the feast, Damon is accused of murder by Ray's cousin, Gerald. Damon replies by claiming his inheritance of Runestone. This first scene, Damon Targaryen says nothing.
What brings you to the Vale? Or have you at last come to consummate our marriage? The Vale sheep might be willing, even if I'm not. Our sheep are prettier, after all. Or perhaps your brother has at last had his fill of your company. Cast you aside in favor of a little girl. What will you do now? Will you strike the child down?
He has no lines.
How do you take that?
I think that the writers, the showrunners, the directors are all trying to make Damon seem a very ambiguous character.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to give you any more than you need. And every single thing he does could be read multiple ways. And I think that they're intentionally toying with us.
Well, the fact that we don't see him kill her.
Yeah.
It could have been a choice, right? Like, and initially you could think, okay, well, that's a choice that they make to just sort of move on from something gruesome. But the end of the show or the episode suggests that they're not really too concerned about shying away from the gruesome. So
almost everything he does, did he have ED or did he walk away? Did he kill his wife? Yeah, pretty sure he killed his wife.
According to Gerald's account, everything would have lined up with what we assumed was about to happen. But because he's been unreliable to his own actions, and because he's cloaked in ambiguity, and yeah, he's like the lord of conjecture at this point, right? And so it's almost impossible to know. And so the assumption is, okay, he picked up a rock, and then that was that. And then we know that she was dead, that she had, her obviously injured head wound, whatever. So it's like everything would line up. I mean, it was like all the information is right there. But then again, all the information was right there when rumors were going about him and Rhaenyra. And so there's
back to the first episode, it's like, did he really say prince for a day?
Right.
Or that not? Wasn't,
yeah, because
he doesn't deny it, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. So that's, and it could just be an effect, right? That could be like sometimes yes, sometimes no, and sometimes you just don't know. And maybe that's the key, right? I mean, they just always keep it. And it's an interesting trick for the audience, right? Because at the actions and the ramifications all still happen, but mm-hmm. we are also left with it's an interesting trick, right? Because we're left in like we're actually part of the show to some degree.
So here's the other thing that this does that I find interesting. Number one, I don't feel fooled by any of this. I feel like I'm reading him as a bad person now.
Right.
I'm pretty sure.
Even if he opted to be like, I'm not going to bash your face in. I'll just leave you here to die.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that's better.
To me, he's fascinating, but I don't think that he's morally gray. I think he's a murderous son of a bitch. That's how mm-hmm. I'm reading him now. So here's the other thing that's interesting to me. Like, there's this kind of this rule in visual storytelling that if you don't actually see someone murdered on screen, then maybe they can bring a character back later, right? Uh-huh. I don't think that they're going to bring his wife back. I think she's dead. But I think that what they're trying to do is they're almost trying to say, yeah, we're going to have a bunch of people die off screen. You're not going to know because we're not following those old rules anymore. I think that this show is intentionally vague on a number of deaths so that if they want to pull that trick later, they can, and it not be like, oh, well, I could totally tell that that person's not really dead. That's well,
I guess you do open up the possibility that he did leave her for dead and figured she would die. Gerald finds her and she's alive, but he's going to say that she's dead. So that could complicate his inheritance.
Yeah.
I mean, there's that possibility, right? But I mean, it seems like it's pretty clear to me that what happened is what happened. But because we didn't see it, it leaves just the door open a little bit.
Okay, I want to talk a little bit about this scene because I was kind of thrilled to see some other place in the kingdom and some character I'd never met before. And she's riding horseback. She's nowhere near King's Landing. And I was thinking, finally, they're going to introduce me to, like, the wider world.
Yeah, I could see that.
And then, of course, and then, within the next 5 minutes, she's dead.
I would say that I did have a similar reaction, though, with the idea that, like, oh, we're getting out.
Yeah.
We're no longer doing the staycation version of Game of Thrones. We're exploring the space.
Sure. Now, I did feel a similar thrill when I finally started to see the strong characters. I don't know. They're finally coming into their own.
Well, yeah. Now we're seeing because it's when we talk about Strong earlier about being a logical choice for the Hand of the King. But there's no way you can you know, like you were, we talked about before, like, are you suspicious? And I'm like, well, of course, it's Game of Thrones. And then when you see, like, already the network of his son, there's a very complex web that's being woven here.
And the fact, well, and also we're introduced to characters that we've known before, but we didn't see their personalities at all.
Right.
Right. So Lenore and Lena, we're seeing a more robust introduction to them. And then, of course, we meet Lenore's paramour, mm-hmm. the Knight of Kisses. Pretty good nickname, Knight of Kisses.
Yeah, it's not bad. I mean, you don't come about that lightly.
And then, of course, we see him depart as well. But anyway, I'm glad that they're expanding the universe a bit. I would have liked to spend a little bit more time in the Vale.
Well, I feel like we'll get there. But that's the thing, is that Damon seems to go places and we rarely go there with him.
Sure. Again, with the Chaos Tornado thing, you kind of don't know. Did he go there intending to kill her or not?
Right.
Or was it like, this happened, and it's like, okay, I think I'll do this now.
Right.
You know, I don't think he intentionally spooks her horse. He's got his hand out. He's trying to calm the horse. The horse falls. She falls off the horse, and I think he, like,
opportunistic.
Yeah, again, I think it's sort of like he's a Chaos Tornado. He arrives, things happen, and he just goes with it.
And then later he can kind of claim agency over it, right? Like, because the way he behaves, in the same way he, when being mm-hmm. interrogated by Viserys, it's like maybe it didn't go the way he wanted it to, but now he's still trying to control the narrative, and it's like, and even there's ambiguity there, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, didn't I, you know, that's,
yeah,
it's all part of it, right? It's all part of the chaos stays chaotic as long as there's no resolution.
Yeah. Okay, so just to play devil's advocate here, normally when he arrives, it's pretty obvious, right? You see a big dragon in the sky, he descends, he's wearing Daemon Targaryen clothing. In this case, no dragon, so how did he get there? Not sure. He's wearing black with a hood on, so no bright colors.
Or a Skywalker.
A little bit, yeah, sure, a little bit Sith Lord, right? Mm-hmm. And then, so it's almost like he wants to go by stealth. Why do that unless you wanted to do something nefarious?
Right, right.
So, again, yes, it's ambiguous, but if you wanted to argue like, yeah, he showed up because he meant to do dirty.
He knows that the wedding is coming. He knows that there's, you know, if there's a plan, to be hatched, now is the time to start hatching it.
Okay, storyline number two. Viserys pukes off the side of a boat.
Hilarious.
Here's my description of this. Viserys pukes off the side of a boat and others watch. Do you have any thoughts on this, Steve?
Oh, they're just watching him yak and he's the king.
I know how much you love to see people throw up.
It's one of the best. It's one of the best things. I am notoriously really bad at throwing up. I mean, I can do it, but it's
bad
it's
at it. Like
it's a whole thing.
Like, does that mean that you can't make yourself throw up, or that when you throw up, it's just really bad?
Yeah, I've never been able to make myself throw up. Like, I'll just sit there and just fingering my uvula to no avail. And when I do throw up, it's a production. Like, my wife hates when I throw up, and like, cause she throws up, and it's like, you know, and then that's it. But for me, it's a whole like the house shakes a little bit. I mean,
is there a lot of shouting involved?
Yeah, it's just. I think guys like starting up their Harley at 5 a.m. is less obnoxious.
All right. Well, anyway, I wanted to give you a little bit of room to cook on that, because I know you're a big fan.
It's important to me.
Okay, this is Otto's departure. Allison chases after her father. He blames her for his dismissal, claiming that she chose to back Rhaenyra. He tells her that she had better get her son on the throne, or Rhaenyra will be forced to kill the child. That's a lot to lay on a kid.
Yeah, it really is, right?
I mean,
I know she's your friend.
I mean, I don't even ask my kids what they want to be when they grow up because I don't want to put pressure on them. I don't
threaten that their best friend is going to kill their kid if they don't shape up.
If you don't keep the kingdom out of a lot war, you're a failure.
And also, it's your responsibility to keep the kingdom out of all of war. And you may have already set the wheels in motion.
It's probably your fault that the kingdom's going to go to war.
Times have certainly changed, right? Like now people would say, like, oh, you know, your mother and I are splitting up, but it's not your fault. It has nothing to do with you. But you go back into these times, yeah. And it's just like, well, you know, I lost my job because you're really bad at being a good daughter.
I could listen to Otto Hightower say war all day. I mean, when he says war, it gets really guttural. It's like, war.
It may be months or years, but he'll not live to be an old man. And if Rhaenyra succeeds him, war will follow. Do you understand? The realm will not accept her. And to secure her claim, she'll have to put your children to the sword. She'll have no choice.
You know, it's like, it's a whole thing. I really think, you know, war is a horrible thing. I feel like every single time we use that word, it ought to be with Otto Hightower's intonation.
Yeah, no, certainly showing that this is a time pre-lozenge.
All right, so I think that this is Allison's kind of light bulb moment. And she has a couple light bulb moments in this episode. But I feel like when he tells her, your children are going to be murdered. Your best friend will be forced to murder the kids. I don't care how nice you think she is. I don't care how much you trust her. She's going to be forced to have to kill your children. And the only way to save them is to put Aegon on the throne. At that moment, she decides, okay, I'm for the Hightowers.
Yeah, and it's hard to know for sure. Is it a maternal or is it... Or she just kind of now come to that realization that her passivity is not in her best interest. And I think that's kind of how she's been operating. We've talked about this before, right. Is that like when talk about agency, and she just sort of, all right, well, I guess I got to do this now. Well, I guess I got to do this now. And I think Otto really kind of lays it out and then just says, you know, doing nothing this role, your job as queen, it's not to do nothing. You know, you do have the ability to influence the king's decisions, and you've seen it. And so you really need to be thinking long term about it, right?
Well, he's saying you got to play the game. You got to play the Game of Thrones. It's sort of the winner you die speech that Cersei gives, right?
Yeah, and this is you know, going back to what we talked about with Viserys. I mean, he has this. Like, he understands the notion of duty and he understands the political game, but he also is like trying to upset it in a way that is a bit passive. It's like, well, yeah, but I want this, right? So, and you have to make a decision, like we've said, are you going to do something different than tradition intentionally and then follow through, even though you're going to have obstacles and you're going to have challenges along the way, or are you going to just keep on being, you know, be politically minded for the system that is that is set up currently so that it can keep on going in perpetuity. And so here we have this same sort of thing. It's like that some of the things that we consider virtuous about some of these folks are it's vulnerability in that world, right? Because part of it being, and Viserys even talks about it, and I'm sure we'll get into that subject about like, well, his legacy is sort of like meh.
It's meh, and yet, you know, in our world, it'd be like, that's how you ought to live. We're all sort of living meh because that's what peace is like, right?
Right.
It's not heroic. And,
yeah, and so for him, it's like, well, I won't be remembered because everything was fine. And it's like, and maybe that's part of the actions, right? It's like, well, it's easy to be more passive in your decision making because you don't have to really look towards the future when your present isn't threatened.
Right.
And so here we have that where it's starting to happen, right? Like, because of that, you know, passive nature, the irony here is like, well, you're actually kind of creating a situation where the next person's legacy is going to be shaped by how they manage conflict because your inaction or your sort of maybe laissez-faire approach to decision making has set into motion vulnerabilities that are perceived as weaknesses, and those weaknesses will be exploited by challengers.
Absolutely. And I think Alicent realized that she's being tested, right? So later on, Viserys talks about, like, if I had been tested, maybe I'd be a forged different person. Well, Alicent realizes in this moment that she's being tested, and she's got to take sides, and I think this is the moment where she decides, I'm going to choose my family. And that includes her children. So I think that there is a maternal aspect to this too. Let me jump into the next storyline because it allows us to talk about the other element of this. This is, I'm calling Alicent's come up. Alicent is doing her best Sansa Stark impression in front of a weirwood tree. Larys Strong tells her that Rhaenyra was brought tea the night of Daemon's return in the creepiest possible way. Alicent summons Kristen to ask him about Rhaenyra's sex life. Kristen confesses his own dishonor. She thanks him for his honesty. Later on, Alicent arrives late to the welcome feast. She interrupts the king's speech in a notably green dress. Finally, she finds Kristen in the Godswood, about to commit suicide, and stops him. So the other part of this is that she realizes once again she cannot trust her friend. She's been played. She's being played by everybody, and she feels foolish about it. And I think she resolves, like, I'm not going to be the fool anymore. I'm going to start playing other people. They're not going to play me.
Right, and it's a pretty dramatic shift, right? I mean, it is wild when we've seen so much of her sort of just letting everybody else run the show, and whether it was mm-hmm. that she was trying for peace or she was, you know, I mean, also she's very young. Her life went from I'm hanging out with, a princess to now I'm her stepmom. I mean, that's
also her dad was kind of a jerk, but she thought her dad was smart, right? I think that she thought maybe my dad is not the most trustworthy guy, but at least I can trust him to be politically smart, so I better do what he says. Now her dad's gone, and he's basically saying, it's on you. Now this is on you. You're going to have to be politically smart. And I think she realizes that if they're counting on me to be politically smart, I am never going to trust Rhaenyra again.
Right. Well, and the other part of this, too, is that you've got, it's an interesting dynamic with her and Otto. It's like, hey, I put you in this position. You know, and maybe that's kind of news to her to some degree. Like, he's like, even if she knew, it was like, okay, well, wait a minute. Now it's like, and he's like, so I kind of expected you to continue to do this, to do the right thing as far as I'm concerned. And she didn't, is from his perspective. And so now mm-hmm. it's like, well, wait a minute. Like, even if she looks to her father with respect, his plan was to use her as a pawn. Who knows how long, right? I mean,
sure.
So I mean, it's a hard spot to be in, because you're like, well, everybody's using me. I either have to go completely independent, which is just not happening, mm-hmm. or I have to decide which side, you know, which side do I want to be used by, and maybe more to the point, which side can I be simultaneously used by, but also have more agency? And
yeah,
it sounds like it's Team Hightower. And that does make sense, especially if you know that your husband has a shelf life. Who's on your side there, right? I mean, the realm may prefer your son to be on the throne, but if it switches, if he drops dead and Rhaenyra's in charge, well, good luck.
Yeah,
you better kind of plant your flag now.
That's right. This show is so much more, in some ways, this show is a lot more subtle than the previous Game of Thrones. Like, I compared Alicent to Sansa in this episode. What was Sansa going through? Well, let's see here. Her betrothed put her father's head on a spike, and then he invited her outside to look at it, right? It's not very subtle, you know?
No.
It's kind of in your face. Hey, by the way, I killed your Septa too. There's her head over there. This this show is like, I'm going to show up about 3 minutes too late to this party. I'm going to wear a green dress, and I'm going to make a political statement, and then I'm going to walk, and I'm going to say hello to Rhaenyra, but I'm going to make sure that she knows that I'm saying hello. In a very cool voice. And I might look away from her in disdain, but only subtly. You know, it's all kind of like, this show has a whole different tone, and I think it might shift later in the season.
Right.
But so far, the stakes are like really loud and really silent at the same time.
Well, and that's, I think it really works well with Viserys's, you know, lamenting as he's just getting grosser by the second about how, you know, like there's just not a whole bunch going on, like in the grand scheme of this chapter of the Targaryen history. It's not like he's just going to go down. He's not going to go as Viserys the Brave or Viserys the Conqueror. He's just going to go as Viserys the Pussy.
That's right. Yeah.
He's grody.
He's super pussy, this guy. The other thing about it is like, all right, so Allison's walking around the party and Hobert Hightower comes up to her and says, I thought you'd wither in the bright sun of King's Landing after your father's shadow left, but you stood tall. He's showing his allegiance. He's basically saying,
right,
hey, if it comes down to you or her, we're going to back you. And I want you to know,
right,
that we're behind you. But again, very subtle. You know, this is all kind of like subtext. This is a show all about the subtext, right?
Because we're moving, right? We're moving towards a certain inevitability of where conflict has to come up, right? And that, you know, and so it's interesting when we see and we'll get to that near the storyline, but when Kristen does what he does, it is pretty jarring. So, you know, I mean, we've seen some violence for sure, but this is like, oh yeah, if we were watching the original Game of Thrones, we're like, oh yeah, we were due for a face smashing.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And so because we haven't really had, like, it's been this slow burn of tension because everything's under the surface, and that's what makes the political intrigue in this one so much more captivating, in my opinion, because it is under the surface and there are these family ties, and because it's, if you were to, from an outside looking in, you would just go, well, this is the way it goes. You know, it's a little different. Oh, a woman on the throne. Well, that's scandalous. And so, like, it's more stuff you'd read in the headlines. But underneath it all is just it's a powder keg,
yeah,
right?
I mean,
it's
right. Just, I think that
waiting,
that's what they're doing.
It's waiting to get
They're lit. Doing that really well. Like, this whole thing's a powder keg. And it's almost like every episode you see a little bit more gunpowder poured into the powder keg, and you know, because it's Game of Thrones, it's gonna blow at some point, right?
Yeah, who's the match? Right, sure. Like who's about to set this thing?
Yeah, I think that we're supposed to think that green dress is the match. And just a little kind of behind the scenes book stuff is that eventually this thing devolves into civil war. You probably guessed that.
Dance of the Dragons.
Yeah, and it's the Greens versus the Blacks. That's sort of how they demarcate themselves. And of course, you know, now we know why the Greens are called the Greens. So yeah, of course, I think they've been doing some really interesting stuff with costuming throughout this season, but I haven't really wanted to call it out. But this episode, we see Daemon come up. He's wearing a black hood, right?
Right,
and then of course when Allison shows up, she's wearing the green dress. I enjoyed that, and I'll have a little medievalist on this episode to talk about the purpose of colorful clothing in the medieval world. Steve,
nice.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Anything else about this? We're going to get to the actual feast here in a bit, but I think Allison's... This is sort of Allison's episode.
For sure, because she gets, I mean, and it's in it, and I think it's particularly intriguing too, and it adds nuance to it. It's like she's learning that she's being played while she's being played.
Right.
I mean, if you think about it, yes. Otto is really still turning the screws, letting her know. Like he's laying the stakes out for her, but he's also, he knows he's her father, he knows what buttons to push. And then you've got, is it Laris, right?
Oh, yeah. Laris, I'm really excited about Laris, but go ahead.
Well, because now we're getting our, you know, sort of a little bit more, now we like a little finger type,
yep,
dabblings, right? Where it's, everything is, it's like, it's very Tucker Carlson. I'm just asking the question. I'm not saying anything. I'm just asking, what a relief that it wasn't that. And it's just really something. And so he totally sets her up. And he knows exactly what he's... So he is playing her and to get to the truth, mm-hmm. which is an interesting angle too, right? Where it's like... I love how no one says anything about anything. It's always just sort of, you know, flirt towards it,
yeah,
so that that they can do the work, and then you have like plausible deniability about anything.
Well, Laris is interesting because what he does is, I think he's figured out like people don't view me as a threat, mm-hmm. and it's because of his disability. And so what does he do? He kind of hunches over. Like, I don't know if he needs to hunch, but I think he's a tall guy,
right.
But he wants to make himself look a little bit less intimidating. Maybe he's leaning on his cane a little bit too much. When he came into the room during the hunt, he like sits down with the ladies and he's like, yeah, looks like the gods didn't want to give me a heroic physique. I'll hang out with you ladies. He
really
sort of leaning into the idea that he's not a threat at all. Like, what is he doing in the garden? He's smelling roses, you know, he's smelling flowers. He knows a little bit about botany. He's concerned with Rhaenyra because maybe she was sick. I was a little bit concerned. Is she unwell? So he's kind of leaning into his disability and using it to his advantage.
Yeah. So that scene was pretty great. And then it leads to her interrogating Kristen, not expecting the answer she was going to get. Which, you know, again, is this Kristen being dutiful or is he just ticked off? Maybe he's got no one to brag to.
He's an interesting character to have in this story because he's almost your Ned Stark character a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't see Ned Stark ever sort of committing suicide for love or whatever, but he's this guy that his vows mean something to him. He feels really conflicted that he's now a man of dishonor. It's almost like he can't imagine living with the secret out in the world that makes him look dishonorable. He would rather die.
Right.
And you put him against, like, in contrast to all these other devious people in King's Landing, it's almost how Ned Stark functioned the first season of Game of Thrones.
Right, and he, you know, his confession becomes a plea to be spared a brutal death, right? And so it's like that was his, as much as the attempt in the Godswood area to do himself in, you could argue that he was committing suicide by confessing, right?
I think so. That's right.
If he truly believed that would be the outcome. And he was gonna go to the mercy, because I think it was like, I don't want to, I can't. Whether it was honor, whether it was love, whether it was a combo of both, which is an interesting thing too, because you know it's one thing to say he's super honorable, but like his option was, well, why don't we just flee and get married and you know, ditch the crown. That's not the most honorable thing.
It's not the most honorable, but I think there's part of it, like, he can't live with his dishonor. And then there's a part of him that feels like, I was in love.
Right, and if I dishonored myself, it's got to mean something now.
That's right. I can live with this if my love is reciprocated.
If you're gonna have me dishonor myself for in my code, and then have me be a secret lover, that's not better.
Well, I think the other way to read that is he's just lovesick and he can't live without her. I mean that's another way to look at this. Anyway, I thought it was interesting that Allison does not reveal to him what she was initially asking.
Well, so is this, I think shows that, like, okay, well, Allison may have been the sleeping giant, right? You don't grow up with Otto as your father and probably not pick up
exactly
a few things, right?
Exactly.
Like a good coach's son who ends up being a good coach themselves, right? Like, you just sort of absorb some of this, right? So once she gets the information from Laris, and then she uses it to get more details from Kristen, and then brand new information comes along. Again, this is all about calling audibles, right? She, to your point, does not reveal, but instead it's like, ooh, this might be a little bit of mm-hmm. ammunition that I could be using later. And so now she reacts, and her reaction, instead of, you know, storming into to confront Rhaenyra or go to the king, she sashays in with a green dress and it's on.
Yeah, that's right.
And then later she spares him. So not only does she spare his life because she had every right and probably almost duty to have him killed, she spares his life, and then he's killing himself, and then she saves him again.
And I think this so. I think she does save him, but I think she saves him for a purpose. And I want to talk about that.
I think her intention is the same way that she did not reveal her original question. Now she owns him.
Yes, that's right.
And what is his greatest asset besides being an impeccable face smasher? He has Rhaenyra's ear and vice versa.
That's right. So I think she's using him as a spy. I think that she's going to be using him as a spy.
And he has an option. Because you could say, well, but if he loves Rhaenyra, it's like, yeah, well, also he disgraced the code. She's like, I'll spare your life. You've been hurt by this person.
Uh-huh.
So let's, for the good of the kingdom.
I think that that's probably the play. I think the play is to say, your life means something now. If it can be for the greater good, this is going to be your mission as a knight, right? I think that that's the play she has. I don't think that she can kind of like goad him into revenge or something like that.
But I can redeem your white shirt.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's interesting.
I'll give you spiritual OxyClean.
All right. This next storyline is called The Proposal. King Viserys arrives on Driftmark. The king proposes a match between Rhaenyra and Lenor, or Laenor, I don't know how to say his name. After a brief discussion about succession and surnames, the king departs. Meanwhile, the newly betrothed walk along the beach and discuss the prospect of an open marriage. Corlys and Rhaenyris talk over their son's true nature, the danger he'll be faced by becoming a target, and justice. Later, the two betrothed kids talk about the future with their paramours. The Knight of Kisses seems happy with the arrangement, whereas Kristen Cole suggests that they elope to Essos. Kristen is rejected. Again, very subtle. Very subtle. It's like a key plot point is that Corlys Velaryon doesn't meet the king at the gate and bows a little bit, like a half a second. He bows a little bit too late when the king's in the room. Mm-hmm. It's like, this is all kind of like subtext. Corlys is absolutely getting back at Viserys, and it's not on the surface. It's all subtext. So,
and it is something we've talked about this earlier when we were first getting ready for this series. And, like, you know, the Targaryen lifestyle is going to be a tough one to to sell.
Yeah, sure. Right.
But here we are, like, talking about all these other things, and we're captivated. And it's like, you want to take a bird's eye view here. It's like, I'm upset that you didn't marry my 12-year-old daughter. But I do accept you offering your daughter to my son.
Well, also, this open marriage is like the best possible thing that could happen for us, right? Because we don't like the idea of cousins being married. But this is like a marriage where they both get to have sex with someone who they're not related to.
But they will have to create babies.
So. They will. At some point, they're going to have to
figure that out.
But those
are duty babies. Those are duty babies, not romance babies.
Right. Exactly. These are
incest for the good of the land.
These are all duty babies in the Targaryen world. All right. So anyway, I thought that this bit of Driftmark, I thought it was an interesting way into it. A lot of detail. You know, they're walking down the halls and you kind of see like, this guy's decorated his palace with skulls and, you know, he's looking at the crab feeder's head on a pike.
Right.
And he's sitting on like a driftwood throne. There's this backstory to that throne. It was initially gifted to the king of Driftmark by like mermen a long time ago. There's like a mythology behind the throne. So this is the kind of thing that kind of gets me interested. I want to see the world outside of King's Landing.
Right. Yeah, and all I could think of is like, I bet you that place smells like my grandparents' house. My grandpa used to make driftwood clocks.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah, he would get this driftwood and he would lacquer it. Oh. And then he would put little like clock faces on it. And
I think we might have owned one of these clocks at one point.
And it's like, as a kid, you're just like, well, that's boring, right? And I guess it's kind of a cool thing, but like their house was like, you would think, you know, I tell you this, that they're like, oh, they must be really interesting people and like maybe kind of artistic. And I'm like, they had a pool table that you couldn't play with. They had a dog that was too mean to touch. They had an organ that they didn't plug in because it was too loud. And I'm like, why am I ever here?
It's like he's got 12 of these driftwood clocks. None of them have batteries that work.
Oh, yeah. No, and I remember like he made these things and they were like pretty attractive, you know, pretty interesting. And I remember for my like sister's like wedding gift or something, he made her a clock. But it was like he took a big old piece of styrofoam and spray painted it gold.
Oh, she didn't even get driftwood?
No, she got a styrofoam one.
They're talking about a subtle burn.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is the same guys that when they would come visit our house, like him and then my uncle, they would take out their metal detectors and go searching around our property for things that like our kids and like my nieces and nephews lost. What? And then they'd keep it.
I had never heard this story before. This is fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
I will say there's a little part of me that thinks that's pretty cool. I like metal detectors.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember. I remember my wife finding like they found this like little toy hammer or something. And he's like polishing it off. And then they're like looking at it, you know, my uncle and my grandpa. And she's like, oh, cool. You found, you know, our nephew's little toy hammer. He's looking for that. And they just looked at him, looked at my wife and slowly put it in the bag and kept on. On metal detecting.
All right, this next storyline is called King Scabby Petty. After returning from Driftmark, the king faints in the courtyard. Two maesters fuss over him and decide to leech him. He discusses his legacy with Lionel Strong. He wonders if his life might have been different if he had been tested in battle. After a welcome feast gone wrong, he decides to wed the princess in private. Then he collapses again. This, I don't know if you noticed this, but there's two maesters, and one of the maesters suggests not leeching him. Like, he's like, I've got this other herbal thing he can drink. Maybe it's better than leeching the guy. That guy's name is Maester Orwile, and he'll be kind of important later on. So I just thought I would call him out.
So this is sort of like you have somebody who's like traditional medicine versus sort of like holistic.
Yeah,
approach,
I guess,
right?
So. Yeah, this.
So someone's over here like, hey, I think what we need to do is I think we need to go into surgery. And then the person's like, nah, man, just eat these gummies. Feel better.
Sure. Or it's like he's sort of the newfangled doctor that the old doctor kind of distrusts.
Right.
Because he's like reading medical journals and whatnot.
Right, right. Yeah. He's actually got a WebMD app. And he's like, no, no, seriously, you can just scroll and check it out.
I want to talk about what Vera says here. He's sort of looking back on his life. And I think he knows that he's winding down, right? All of the indications are that his health is fading really fast.
Yeah, he just bleeds.
He just bleeds. He's just a big gooey mess.
He's just a bummer, man.
He's an absolute bummer. He has this interesting conversation with Lionel Strong that was very Lord of the Rings to my mind. And he's basically talking about like, hey, I didn't live an exciting life. They're not going to sing songs about me. And Lionel says, you know, other people might just call that a pretty good life. Mm-hmm. To me, that kind of reminded me of this conversation between Frodo and Sam, where they're talking about the kinds of stories you like to listen to versus the kind of stories you'd like to be in. It was sort of like, we like to read the exciting stories, but I don't think that we would want to live through any of those stories. The things that make them exciting are also the things that make them very dangerous. And they're sort of realizing that, you know, they're in a story. And this is the kind of stuff that happens to people in a story. I think that King Scabby Patty's realizing, my story is really dull.
Yeah. And it's going to end pretty gnarly.
I do.
My story is not going to be a pop-up book.
Okay, the after last episode, I'm really glad that it's not a pop-up book. I do think that he's wrong, though. I think that he has been tested, and I think he's failed.
Right. And I think that's an important distinction, because from his perspective, the kind of test that he thinks that he needed to go through would have been much more
glorious,
swashbuckling.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. But the reality is, it's like, no, you were tested, and the realm is going to be actually a little bit worse for your being there now.
That's right. That's right. And I do think that there's something about him, like for the first, I think for the first time this episode, I thought, why doesn't he just throw Damon in a dungeon?
Right.
Like, he told Damon, I don't ever want to see you again. And then he walks in and he kind of just gives him a look. And I thought, for the first time, I think, how is this king not throwing his brother in a dungeon at this point? And the only way I can make sense of it is that, like, he just can't bring himself to do this to his brother.
And that's how I read it. And I read it as believable in the sense that from a Viserys standpoint, it would be more shocking to me if he just actually did something, especially when it comes to Damon. And I think
the last episode, he was kicking him. He kicked him and said, I never want to see you again. That's something.
Yeah, we've all kicked a sibling, but we didn't kick him to death. So, and I think the Damon Corliss conversation, when Damon's basically like, hey, you don't get to talk crap about my brother.
Yeah.
I can talk crap about my brother. Right. And I think that, to me, that was a much more poignant moment. And I think it really, speaking of subtle, like, it really sort of set the foundation. I mean, if anybody, like, who should be more upset at whom? And it's hard to say, right? And Damon is this bad guy who doesn't care about, you know, like, he may be smashed in skulls for all we know. But don't talk crap about my brother. Like, there's a certain line, like, there are certain lines that they will cross for each other, but then there's another more, you know, barely visible line that we assume they will not cross. I might bring you to death, but I'm not going to kill you.
Well, the other way to look at this is that Damon knows that his brother will never do anything. Right?
Right.
It's like, I know that you're pissed at me because of what I did to Rhaenyra last time I was here. I don't care. I'm going to walk in. I'm going to sit right here. I'm going to smile like I don't have a care in the world. And then I'm going to go dance with the bride.
It's the trope that you see a lot in film and TV, where it's just like, If they wanted us dead, we'd be dead by now.
Yeah, sure. Sure, sure, sure.
And so that, like, how, like, of all, like, he didn't have me thrown into a dungeon or killed, and he thinks that I defiled his daughter.
He thinks what, that, and...
What more?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, what more could he do? There's not... In my mind, there's nothing that Damon could do that would actually cause his brother to do anything about it. I mean, he...
Because we've seen the limits be tested here.
He's sitting there watching Damon almost kiss Rhaenyra on the dance floor. And he basically, like, you know, is kind of, like, looking up like a... Like a little field animal, like, what's happening over there? He doesn't really do anything. And I guess the whole thing gets interrupted by this fight, but it's hard for me to imagine that he could do anything that would warrant his brother's immediate response.
Right, and so that's why I believe it, because I believe, especially juxtaposed with the, I wasn't tested, and it's like, and we just said, yeah, you are. In fact, you get tested all the time by your brother.
Yeah.
And you fail that test every single time.
Yeah.
And it's a wild thing that takes place. And especially, you know, you talked about the sort of the comparison, we talked about this earlier, you know, where you know, he confronts his wife and his wife goads him to what we assume is like if she just left him alone, he wouldn't have done anything. But like look on the flip side, right? Mm-hmm. Look what Damon does to Viserys. Goads him all the way through. I'm coming back. You're banished. What if I came back? What if I cut my hair?
Yeah, sure. What if I wear glasses next time? What are you going to do then?
That's the old me. That was the old me, man. Look at me. Short hair, Damon's
probably wear
cool.
A hat. What if I wear a hat? I look like a totally exactly. Different guy if I was wearing a hat.
That's right. He comes in on a Segway, and he's just like, well.
It's like, I didn't like the other guy, but he's changed, this guy.
He's got a little more zip in his step. Yeah,
I don't know, the whole mutton chop look, I trust him now. I feel like he's a different person.
The smoking jacket.
All right, last storyline, the feast. After a heavy dose of smarm by Jason Lannister, House Valerian enters the throne room. Lenor is presented as the future king consort, and everyone claps. Then Daemon enters to the chagrin of King Viserys. During the festivities, the Knight of Kisses susses out that Kristen is the other paramour and approaches him. Kristen bristles at the suggestion that his affair with Rhaenyra is now an open rumor. Daemon dances with Rhaenyra. She goads him to take her by force to Dragonstone and wed her. The king looks on as a fight breaks out. The source of the fight is unclear, but Kristen ends up beating the Knight of Kisses to a pulp. All right. So what happens? I think this is meant to be intentionally vague.
Because Damon and Rhaenyra start to go out of sight from our perspective, right?
I don't know what is the source of this fight. And
you would think, like, I mean, if you're connecting dots, like, well, maybe there was a reaction to Damon's advances. Because at this point, I mean, it's very clear, like, this is a, like, an engagement ceremony, essentially.
Yeah.
So if anybody's making advances towards, you know, the queen to be, regardless of who that person is. You would think that would invite some sort of action, and I think we can be inclined to believe that that's what spurs it, right? That Damon in his chaos tornado did it, and to some degree, maybe yes.
Yeah, you don't invite a tornado to a party and not expect a fight to break out. And yet, the other way you could look at this is that. Well, he had nothing to do with this. Kristen Cole just decided he was going to go pummel this guy.
Especially from our perspective, we know that he goes over there and he starts doing his Damon thing. Mm-hmm. But Rhaenyra is not pushing away his advance. In fact, she's suggesting something else. Whether she's doing it tongue-in-cheek or she's doing it to challenge him, that dialogue is very clear that this is not... This is not a get away from me.
Well, on top of that, he's taunted by two women in this episode. He's taunted by his former wife, who in my view, he kills, right?
Right.
And then he's taunted by Rhaenyra to take me, you know, take me away. You've got you're armed. Go fight through the Kingsguard. Kidnap me if you want me. And so for me to think that he does nothing after being taunted or being goaded is not, that's not in his character.
Right.
So I don't, so it makes me feel like he's the source of this in some way. I'm not really sure what to do with all that.
And here's what I believe. I believe he's the source of this because he just always is. Even if he doesn't do it. Like that, that's kind of his thing. He doesn't have to seal the deal, which is kind of a fun parallel for this ED thing, is he doesn't actually have to finish to not have done some damage.
Sure. Okay.
And so Kristen is all torqued up for a number of reasons why, right? I mean, he told the queen about his actions. So they're out in the open to somebody. So he's kind of like, at any point she could just flip the script and say, yeah, seize him. Like that can happen.
Yeah.
He knows that he's been spurned by his lover. And if he wants to continue to be with her, it has to be in secret while she's, you know, keeping appearances. That's not what he's all about. Now you've got, you know, his secret is not only out to the queen, but like Lenore and his paramour know. Mm-hmm. And now he's got this. He's like, so he's dishonored. Like his dishonor isn't even a secret anymore.
That's right.
And who knows how, and he knows that can be used against him. And that's kind of how it's presented, right? And so he's all fired up. And then on top of it, now Daemon's back in the picture and he's going to be going over there. And now he's messing around with or doing something with Rhaenyra. Mm-hmm. So he, like, we talk about powder keg. Kristen was ready to explode.
Yeah, that's right.
And so Daemon's presence may have been enough to light the match without doing anything else, right?
Sure. All right, so there's another way to look at this Kristen Cole business. And I think everything you just said, I agree with. I do want to note that I think that there might be a homophobia element to this. Okay. I was thinking about this throughout the episode. I was thinking, okay, so Kristen Cole's Mr. Honorable, right?
Right.
That's exactly the kind of guy who has a standard that he's trying to live up to, some sort of impossible standard that does not leave room for an LGBT view of the world.
I think there's something to that. I know that this episode has been getting some recent criticism. Well, it would be weird if it wasn't recent because it just came out.
Sure.
But about how they call it the bury the gays trope. And it's it's where we see maybe excessive violence done to somebody from the LGBT community that might feel a little bit not necessarily out of place. Like it may make sense from a narrative perspective, but maybe the way it's handled, and especially how graphic this is, and if you juxtapose it to the lack of graphic scene of Daemon killing his wife.
Sure.
Again, that could be also because we're meant for that to be ambiguous. So I know that that's definitely could be part of the narrative mm-hmm. structure, and that's important. But if you just take it at no pun intended, face value, and you take the two and go, one was obscured, uh-huh. one was clearly more graphic. So that's why I think there's a little bit of criticism, because I think Game of Thrones has had a tendency to do this in the past. And I don't think it's just a Game of Thrones thing, but I mean, it happens in other media as well. But I think this is another one of those, hey, we get introduced to this character, and here's an interesting element of that that story. And then it's quickly dismissed, and it's dismissed in a pretty violent fashion. But on the flip side, to your take on it, part of the graphic nature of it and the horrifying end is because of a critique potentially of how that would be perceived by somebody.
Yeah, I think that I find it very believable that someone like Kristen Cole would be homophobic.
Sure.
I think that might be a more standard view in this world. Does it have to be this violent? Right? Why is this death so violent?
And portray, I mean, like, it could have still been, like, it wasn't just violent, but we had to see, like, it's the most graphic thing I think we've seen thus far, right?
I mean, there was a guy that got his nads chopped off in episode one.
It's not often you see hamburger face, though.
I, you know what? You're right. Hamburger face is that's a special kind of gross.
It is a special kind of gross.
Yikes. And then, of course, that scene where Lenore's, he's not even given a chance to grieve. He's just, let's get the wedding over now.
Man, that was so much to take. And then the wedding scene becomes so much more like unpalatable, right? Yeah. You realize for a show that does time jumps, this is immediate and this is real time. Cause I mean, he's still like, his nose is still bleeding.
Yes.
it felt like torture, right? I mean, like, here, all right, move on. And those two kids, I mean, let's be real, right? They're kids, their world just, not only is it like going to change because now they're going to have to be married and eventually run the show.
Yeah, yeah.
the only thing they bonded over was an agreement that they would continue to pursue the love, and those two loves, one killed the other.
Yeah.
So that relationship is a little bit different now.
I think so. All right. So here's my question. What was the most awkward, loveless wedding ceremony? This one or the one between Tyria and Sansa?
Oh, yeah. No, that's a good question.
Because that other one was pretty bad, too.
Yeah, that was so awkward. This one is really something else, too, I think, just because of all of the circumstances involved, right? I mean, and they're like fresh off, hey, the guy that I was kind of hoping to hang out with just killed the guy you were hoping to hang out with. I mean, hopefully we can get past this.
It's not ideal. It's not ideal at all. All right, so dismemberment count. No dismemberments, although bloody face count.
The parts were gone.
We definitely have the bloodied face count, I'm going to say, is at 2, because we got a bloody nose from Viserys. Night of Kisses is not going to be kissing anyone ever again.
No.
So then we have the cheek speak again. The Under takes it. We're both wrong.
The Under takes it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Both wrong on that. And then so next week, where are you going to set the line at for next week?
Well, so we're time jumping, right?
From the previews for next week, it looks like a major time jump.
So we're going to get new performers.
Either that, or this is going to be like that A-Team episode where they replace face and don't mention any difference at all. It was sort of where my cynicism was born as a television viewer. Like, they're just going to replace face with another actor and they're not going to give me any explanation. His name is right. Face.
You would think that that'd be something.
His face is kind of crucial to this character. That's his name.
So,
all right. Sorry. I've been waiting to do a podcast on that. Continue.
I think we're doing the time jump. And is Viserys dead? Or we'll find that out, I'm assuming. But like, were we to believe that he just dropped dead?
Yeah, I think I better not say anything.
Okay.
Okay, so cheek speak for next week?
It's so hard. I mean, I tend to.
It's like predicting like baseball before analytics. It used to be like, well, I think he's due.
Right. You know? Due would be. And that's the thing, is I've been operating on, and that's how I would like, you know, I used to always watch sports. I'm like, oh, dude, this is going to be the Ron Harper game. You know, he's due.
He's due. Yeah, he's a good player who's been bad all season. He's due to break out of it this game. So it's possible that we get, but I kind of feel like the last episode, episode 4, was kind of instructive. It was like, this is going to be our eyes wide shut episode. It's still, I mean, just very few buts in that episode.
Yeah.
I think you got to set the line pretty low now, don't you?
I was going to set the line at 1.5.
One and a half. So one full moon and a side cheek.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take the under. I just feel like I should be taking the under every single time.
Yeah, I want to go over.
You're going to keep going over till you get one.
Our listeners are just going to be like, is he just like horned up or, you know.
All right. Finally, Steve, was this episode a Danny, a Dorn, or a Dinklage?
I'm going to say it was properly Dinklage.
I'm going to say that, too. I think I got I had two Dinklage-ranged episodes in a row.
Yeah.
So this season's shaping into form for sure.
Yeah. And I'll say, I don't think it was just because of like shock value. I mean, there was an element of like, it's a wedding, Game of Thrones, you got to give me something, you know?
Sure.
And so, but I also think that of all the things we talked about, the rise of Alicent, the introduction of Laris, it's just so many things in there that I'm like, oh, you know, even though we just got glimpses of the outer worlds, those glimpses they went a long way for me. And I'm hoping that that enough detail was done on those to indicate that we're going to go mm-hmm. places going forward. So I feel like it had all the things that I usually look for.
I think that I got a much better window into the Valerian family, right? It's more than just the parents now. These kids have personalities. Mm-hmm. I'm really excited about that. There was this moment where Lionel Strong, like, nods to his eldest son. By the way, his nickname is Breakbones.
Love it.
So he gives a little nod to Breakbones. And it was almost like Breakbones gets the permission to just like, I'm just going to go kick some ass now. My dad just gave me permission to kick some ass. And he totally pulls it off. And then Laris is like, I'll tell you what, I was never a fan of the Littlefinger actor.
Mm.
This guy is sort of like everything that I wanted from Littlefinger, and I love the actor. So I'm really enjoying these strong boys. And all of that, none of that includes anything about Daemon. And I think that if you could do this whole episode without any Daemon Targaryen, and I probably would have given it a Dinklage.
I agree.
And then Daemon walks in the room and you're just like, oh gosh, this is just too much.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this one, it had it all. It was so well done. And the acting again is great. The direction is wonderful.
None of this works without Viserys though. I'm telling you.
Oh no, I know. And that's,
this guy's passivity is just amazing.
And if this is the last we've seen of him, that's a bummer. I mean, it's fine.
Yeah, what an amazing story performance, perspective, right?
But it's just really, and I'll be honest, of all of the actors, he was the one I was the most concerned about my ability to embrace.
Sure. Yeah.
Just because of everything else I've seen him in.
Because of Hot Fuzz,
you know, and sure. But also just like, you know, you get a sense of like, I don't want, the less I know of an actor prior, the better.
Yeah.
Or if they're more unrecognizable. And he's like such a recognizable face, but he crushes.
Yeah, he's amazing.
He's so good.
He's amazing. And I will say that I'm going to miss the younger versions of Alicent and Rhaenyra.
Yes, absolutely. Going forward.
So I'm hoping maybe for a flashback every now and again. But if this was it, you know, if sort of it was a 5 and 5 thing, like we'll give the younger duo the first 5 episodes, we'll give the older duo the second 5 episodes. I think I'm okay with that. I think I'm okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, so exciting, exciting episode. I can't wait. I can't wait to see where this goes next.
Well, and every episode has made me like excited for the next one. This one had more of that, like,
mm-hmm.
come on, Sunday.
Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info.
You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping.
We want to think that it was extremely different back then, but it actually really wasn't. Like the stratified system in which the way that medieval society functioned was that you had your peasants. There was this kind of nebulous city class of laborers who were not peasants because they did not work on the land, but they did all kinds of other things that were required for society to function. These are your blacksmiths, these are your tailors, your butchers, your bakers, your jewelry makers, your merchants, like this very nebulous class, which we eventually come to define as middle class. It's been there the whole time. It's just been going by a different name. And this nebulous middle class was constantly viewed as a threat by the upper classes. They were constantly worried that these people are going to rise too high and try to take power from us.
Interesting.
And that's why you see things like, for instance, sumptuary laws. Sumptuary laws governed what people were and were not allowed to wear. There were certain fabrics, certain colors, certain furs that unless you were of a certain social class, you were not allowed to wear them. The color
that's
purple, for instance, was at least in the Roman period and well into the medieval period, unless you were a member of a royal family, you were not allowed to wear purple.
That's so interesting. And would that, I'm assuming that there were other levels of the hierarchy that could wear colors. Is that how it worked?
Yeah. I mean, and of course, part of it was also just dependent on dyes and how expensive they were. But like the dye for purple came from a very specific beetle It's called Tyrian purple because it's beetles from Tyr in the Middle East. And they would have to crush them up, and they would have to and just crush like thousands and thousands of these beetles to just make a very small amount of purple dye. But it was considered one of the rarest dyes in the world. And so if you were going to wear purple, you had to be of a certain bloodline. You had to be of a certain social class. And that's if so you were not in that group and you were caught wearing purple, you could be in a lot of trouble. So,
well, it also would help you identify, like, you know, let's say there's a lord coming through your town. You're going to be able to identify this person just by the kind of clothes this person's wearing and know that they are of a higher social rank, right?
Yeah. And the and they would just look different. It would be different fabrics. It would be different cuts. Mm-hmm. So those laws were there to make visible these societal differences. If you were wearing homespun clothing, odds are you were a member of the lower classes who had to make your clothing at home. If you were wearing sort of local fabric, but it was cut in a fancier way, maybe you were a member of the merchant classes and you were able to afford to have a professional tailor do the work for you.
Yeah.
Whereas if you are wearing just this absolutely jewel encrusted gown, you were probably a member of the upper classes. That was also a way that people would show off their wealth, and people would manifest their wealth through what they wore. If you were going out in public and you were the king, you would be dressed for the occasion, because it was also a way. Yeah, very much like it was a very easy shorthand way for people to go, oh, that's the king, or oh, that's a person. I mean, Monty Python and the Holy Grail, like oh, he's the king, he's the only one who doesn't have shit all over him. Like, well, it's not that quite that simple, but it's also not that much more complicated.
There's some truth there. Oh, that's fantastic. People are strange.
Germans seem wicked when you read history.
Hey, speaking of Germans, we have not made any progress in Germany, and we've lost a little bit of ground in the Philippines. Yeah, so I don't know. I probably inadvertently insulted someone on the last podcast.
Yeah, well, after a while, we wonder how inadvertent it is.
We're killing it in Hungary. We are just like,
so still hungry.
It's not just like the TV reviews category. It's just like in general, just we're in doing general. Really well in Hungary. We've jumped significantly in Australia. We've dipped a little bit in Finland. So,
Yeah, that's for sure my fault.
Yeah, that's your fault for sure. The thing that I'm most excited about is we've jumped 74 ranks to become the second rated TV review podcast in India.
Wow, that's big.
Well, you know how many more people are in India than are in Finland?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we don't need you, Finland. Never did.
Sorry, Philippines. We'd love to have you back. Let's try to do better next week, shall we?
We'll be here waiting for you.
All right, this is a review from Team Giffen. Oh.
Oh, boy.
Django?
No, there's a dog we're taking a look at.
Another dog.
Well, yeah.
This is a dog that you're... what does it taking a look at mean?
Well, Heather wants a dog to replace Laddie for freestyle competitions, because Laddie's not super into it.
Laddie's not cutting it, huh?
No, so he's...
sending Laddie to AAA. Calling up... who are we calling up?
It's true. I mean, it's totally getting sent down. So she's got her hands on a miniature poodle that somebody was looking to potentially rehome.
Uh-huh.
And so she's visiting for a while.
I like the word rehome, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. To see if she's a good
sounds
fit.
A lot less dirty.
Right, yeah.
Then no one wants this damn dog.
That's right. Yeah, I'm just going to rehome my baby at the fire department.
Does this dog have a name?
Well, its name is Henley.
Like Don Henley?
Exactly like Don Henley. Specifically to be named after Don Henley.
Interesting. Interesting that you used to have a dog named after the dude.
I know.
The dude is not a fan of the Eagles. And right. now you got a dog named Henley.
Well, and Heather's like, if we kept her, I think we would keep Henley. And I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, that seems disrespectful.
I'm not going to dishonor the memory of Dude.
You can name her Credence.
Name her Silver Bullet.
Fogarty.
Fogarty. Fogarty's
a Fogarty's an incredible dog name, now that I say it out loud.
All right. This is from Team Giffen. Admirable job. These guys are entertaining. Nice guests and entertaining banter. 5 stars. Thumbs up. Listen during work, and I can still glean educational nuggets. So I'm happy. I'm happy to entertain people at work. I hope that this isn't the kind of work. I don't know if I want to be responsible for like any plane crashes or anything like that.
Yes, he's a brain surgeon.
Yeah, maybe as a brain surgeon, just focus. Just focus on the task at hand. I don't want to be involved with that.
He's a chainsaw juggler.
If you are a chainsaw juggler, Team Giffen, maybe just focus.
Yeah, my concern is with Team Giffen is like maybe that's the name of like he's not just a single chainsaw juggler. Oh. Like he juggles with like a group.
A troop.
Yeah, chainsaw juggling troop, and then he's over there with his AirPods in it. Everybody's like, I really need you to focus on this one.
All right, this is called Double Trouble. This is Jeff from the Midwest.
There's only one Jeff I care about.
There's only one Jeff we care about from the Midwest. We need more of Steve and his opinion. Steve needs to be awake and just a little stoned, not blazed out of his mind. That might help. The professor is doing great when boats are involved, but when without boats, he needs to step it up. Love you guys. Keep doing what you're doing. I will listen to whatever you talk about. You know, this episode we had a boat, and I was thinking we had both a boat and barf. And I'm a big fan of boats, and you're a big fan of people throwing up.
You know me, man. It's almost impossible for me to not laugh a little bit when I see someone throw up.
It's like they've created a show just for us.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, double the pleasure for Double Dragon, that's for sure. Staying awake. Yeah, now staying awake. It's funny because a lot of times I'm at Punchline on Sundays.
Yeah.
And I don't get home until like maybe 11 o'clock. So
do you try to watch when you get home?
Oftentimes I try to get it in before I go to bed.
Well, that's good. I mean, assuming that you're not under the influence while you're driving, you're probably pretty sober then for your House of the Dragon experience.
Yeah, and if I was going to get home at 11, and I probably wouldn't pour myself something or partake in anything, because there's almost no chance I would stay awake in that case.
All right, if you would like to leave us a review on iTunes, it'll probably get read on this podcast. You could always email us at book@baldmove.com. Are you, like, petting yourself or petting a dog?
You can hear the petting?
Oh, I can hear something.
Okay. Yeah, this is a dog, to be clear. I mean, I like this episode, but I didn't like it that much.
I guess I just assume that you're petting the dog. I hear it often. I sort of like, I'm not sure whether I should just like mind my own business.
It's like maybe he really loves the sound of my voice.
It is a good episode.
They really have great chemistry, but I'm concerned about Steve's engagement. Don't you know?
Thank you.